Hello and welcome to Orange is the New Cast, the officially unofficial podcast for Netflix's Orange is the New Black. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm your other host, Cecily.
And tonight we're talking about episodes 407 through 409, including, it sounded nicer in my head, Friends in Low Places. And Turn, Table, Turn. Cecily, what'd you think of this stretch of episodes?
Shit broke bad. Things got real and dark.
I thought it was some of the funniest episodes, and also some of the most real episodes. It actually made me something. It made me feel something that I didn't think I could.
It's a formula where I've
sympathy for Piper.
Yeah, I've learned to sort of adjust my expectations. I know that going into an episode, they're going to set it up and have funny, poignant, interesting, and at the end, they're going to drop a bomb on you.
Right. Well, I like how it seems like all the they got A plots, B plots, C plots, and they kind of tossed a serious potato between the two of them. Like, when the White Power group first showed up to, when the task force against gangs became a White Power group, it was kind of played for
laughs.
A bit of a laugh. Like, oh, how stupid Piper is.
Yeah, this isn't going to go anywhere. It's
and then she gets a swastika branded on her forearm.
Yes.
And that's the thing. So, I felt a lot of complicated feelings because her behavior brought this on, and what she did to Maria was inexcusable. On the other hand, getting a swastika branded onto you is fucking brutal.
Would this have happened? Would they have gotten this opportunity if, how do you say her name? Hapukaka?
Yeah.
If she hadn't been such a bitch to her? If she hadn't deliberately said, I can't save you, there's nothing I can do.
Right. Well, that made it, I mean, there's the thing. There was many flashing red warning lights on the highway to Piper's personal hell.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's one thing to do this prison panty thing, and it's another to send a woman to Max for stealing money from you, although
to get a mother, have an extra 5 years in her sentence.
So you're going to pretend like you're running your corners like this is a fucking episode of The Wire. Well, then
you're going to get a swastika. It's going to get Oz on your forearm.
Yeah, don't be mad when Weebay come running up on your corners with a baseball bat and runs you back off. Like, that's all part of the game, yo. But on the other hand, again, she's Piper smoking crack, didn't see that coming.
There.
Nikki's struggle with heroin, didn't see that coming.
Wow.
On the other hand, the black women's capers with Judy King, delightful. But no, I thought I thought Judy King's capers with the black women, the misunderstandings, and how she thought they were out to beat her down because of some pretty naked racism. Like, you can't do Chitlin' Joe
80s.
and Watermelon Sam.
It was the 80s. I'm not actually making excuses for her, just so everyone knows.
No, man. I grew up with watching Song of the South and hearing about Little Black Sambo. Those were some bedtime story I was told. Like, okay. I get it. Shit was just baseline way more racist than it is today. And already, baseline America is pretty fucking racist. It's moved from the in-your-face to the subconscious on the most part, and institutional, but still. And then the way they dealt with, the homeless problem and how that's inextricably linked to,
mental illness,
and how we have no kind of solution for that.
Yeah. Is there any kind of structure you want to do for this podcast?
Well,
or are you just
going
to talk about everything whenever?
I was just kind of like, this is just my opening statement about how I felt about the episodes. But yes, I can inject some structure if you'd like, Warden.
I just kind of have it
so good from your ivory
I have
tower
it
that
rounded up by character, and you're jumping all over the place, and I don't want to miss any of my very, very interesting and important thoughts I have written down.
Okay, well, let's actually. Usually, I save Piper for last because she's like the bitter pill you just got to swallow.
I feel like we've already talked about Piper, right?
Really, the whole thing?
Yeah, as much as I've got. She gets direct repercussions for her actions, and also Cal is pregnant.
Yes, Cal was delightful as usual. I thought that the way they set this up with Piper being just unconscionably cruel to, what did you say her name was?
Hapukaka.
That the only thing that I was kind of disappointed, and I think I've said this before, is I don't think Piper is really good when she's crying and being contrite. And here's the thing. I'm starting to wonder if that's not a part of the performance, because Piper can't just be genuinely overcome with grief or despair. Mm-hmm. She has to, like, always amp it up. And this is, again, this could be my prejudice because I kind of loathe this character. But I feel like even when she's got something legitimate to complain about, it still has to be amped up and made as dramatic as possible.
Exactly. I've known people like this.
Yes.
And I think that's why I despise the character. It's not the actress or the actor playing her.
Right.
It's the actor playing her. This is a genuine affectation that she's taken on.
It's like those people...
It's the melodrama.
Yeah,
she
it's like when they break their nail, they act in a way as if you stole their car.
Yeah.
And then when their car gets stolen, brace the fuck out. And then if they get a Nazi swastika, like, again, something legitimate that you can be upset about. But somehow...
Yeah, like
she's
everyone...
overplaying the I got a swastika printed on me card.
Nobody look at me. I'm feeling so isolated. Oh, is my sleeve bleeding? Let me hold my arm up in the air so you don't notice. Mm-hmm. It's yes. I mean, and again, that could just be the way that she handles. I don't know.
I can feel the clicky clack of the keyboards of the Piper fans telling us how
that's
wrong
fine.
We are.
Fine. It's like my opinion, man.
Yeah. Okay. Now I think we have done Piper justice.
One more thing I have.
Yeah.
Red is a very solid person. Like, she can come down on you like a sack of bricks,
sure.
But when you need her help, she's there for you.
Well, and I like that.
As long as you haven't fucked her over recently.
That's why this works so well, because, you know, some of the stuff just plays beautifully. Like, Red, who is this proud Russian woman, like, you know... Nobody hates a Nazi like a Russian hates a Nazi, especially, you know, and I feel like that she's already talked about, didn't Piper even say there's something along the lines where, like, can you be tough or are you this or that? And she's like, ask the Germans in winter.
Yeah.
Like, they've already kind of, like, foreshadowed this. But, like, when she found out and she said something like, you know, you've got this horror on your arm. And she, her line at the end where she's like, when God gives you a swastika, he opens up a window. And then you remember, as Piper's sobbing after this is done, and then you remember, God is not real.
It's so good.
It's great. And it leads me to the next part, which is Nikki's return to our minimum security prison. Let's talk about
her
arc.
She's newly fallen off the wagon and she's back to
That's the tragedy.
Heroin, crack, meth, whatever she can get her hands
right,
on.
Right, right. And that's the tragedy of her story, is that she was so close to redemption. If she had known that, you know, she was going to go back home and be returned to her family, that she might have been able to hang on, but she had no way, and she was dealing with this shit with Sophia and Luzchek coming in and emotionally vomiting over her.
I mean, do you think it was a put on for her to say that I'm with a clear conscience, I'm sober right now? Because the first bad thing that happened to her in a truly bad place, mind you, but the first really bad emotionally upsetting thing happened to her, and she immediately goes back to heroin. To going down on guards for heroin.
Well, I mean, I think there's... we'll see, first of all...
If Luzchek hadn't have visited her, she may not have gone back to heroin. If he hadn't have visited her, she would not have gone back to minimum security.
I mean, I don't know what it's like to have a substance abuse problem except for food and video games, but...
So you are aware of exactly how it is.
Yes, exactly. Let me tell you about my habit.
An addict is an addict.
But what I think... What I'm getting is there's different levels of, like, recovery, and each one you feel like you are probably there, and then something, you know, is like, oh, first you think you're white-knuckling it, but you're not even really in recovery, and then you're recovering and you're white-knuckling it, and then, you know, you get a little bit more help and support and it's easier, but, like, each stage is, like, plateaus, and you can kind of get the, you know, knock back on your ass and have a fallback at any time. And I do feel like that loose check thing... Maybe it was a bit of a false, you know, honest recovery, because that she had kind of put all that stuff out of her mind. And then when he comes up and starts, you know, essentially making her confront the injustice of it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got that anger and rage, and she has got no outlet for it. She goes to the heroin, and then she gets thrown back with her family. And I mean, that's the heartbreaking thing. Stealing from Red And if we just want to fast forward to the end, I thought it was just unbelievable when Red comes in and finds her in the bathroom and she's at the low point and she's suffering from withdrawal and it looks like she's trying to start another recovery. And Red just says, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Because if you remember, I forget what the girl's name, the one with the cornrows. Like, I was tough on Trisha. I was tough on her, and now she's in the prison cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't, tell me what to do, Nikki. Tell me, like, I love you like a daughter. And
I mean, that's the thing. I do have some experience with addiction, not myself, but
seen it in others, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it depends on the substance. Mm. On how easy it is to get off of it. Heroin is one of those tough things.
And everyone's personality. Like, that's the thing. Like, seems like addiction of different stripes is a genetic component, too.
I mean, addiction is, I think, a genetic disease. But, I mean, you need a good support system. Mm-hmm. You need really strong willpower.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just can't, with no willpower, you just can't do it yourself. And
as a parent, which, you know, Red is a surrogate parent, where do you draw the line between enabling and support? I feel like that's the that's the real devil of the situation.
I mean, Red's, I feel like she takes a lot on her own shoulders, going so far as to confront every single source of heroin that Nikki has and to cut it off there.
Yeah.
It's effective. It is effective, but you just can't take that on to yourself.
Yeah.
Because once Angie breaks and finds some other way besides shitting it out to get it to Nikki, because
mm-hmm.
she's an addict herself, mm-hmm. then Red's just going to blame herself again. And I mean, it's a destructive thing.
Do you think addiction. That Nikki is going to do the cookie? I mean, what was it about Red, the fact that she, I mean, what was it about this time where she decided that maybe this was enough?
What do you mean?
With Nikki, because it's this, she said at the end, because, okay, so I'm going to get clean. And I wonder what was it that was motivating. I mean, some of it was,
I think it's just having the support there mm-hmm. to have someone that you, when you feel ready and say that I want to quit, that person will help you.
Yeah. And the fact
and that, then when you waver and you try to find it, that person has got your back and stopped it from happening.
Yeah. And the fact that Red didn't do, like, she didn't accuse her. She didn't, like, you know, rub her nose in it. She was just kind of like, I don't know, almost like Nikki felt embarrassed that she had taken a strong woman and reduced her to this, like, quivering, like, I just helpless. I have no power over this disease. And maybe that's what was the shock. Like, I can't do this to Red.
Yeah.
Like, someone cares this much about me.
Yeah.
But
I owe it to them to care about myself.
Right. But, like, also Alex and Piper were talking about, like, you know, we've seen this before, and the person has to kind of do it on their own. And at the end of the day, they have to decide that, you know, I've had this final moment of clarity, and they're going to turn their life around. And then, you know, I that's the thing. Like, I've started off podcasting about a show revolving around addiction, Breaking Bad, and I've heard from dozens and dozens of addicts that have wrote in and told me their personal story. And it's weird because it doesn't seem like there's any, like, magic thing. It's always like, you know, they get to a certain point and there's have to do the incredibly hard work of,
and you'll be addicted for the rest of your
right.
life.
It's not like you could be like, oh, you know, I've been good for a couple years, I think I'm gonna try this, you know, I can now responsibly use heroin.
Yeah.
And every time, and that's the other thing, is like, every time your life is bad, you know that you could turn it around
mm-hmm.
with a couple bucks. And I can't, you know, it's a constant, like, satanic type of temptation, it seems.
Right.
All right. Do we want to talk anything more about Nikki's plot? There is something. I want to talk about her plot with Lorna
okay.
and how that is, you know, that there. What did you think of that? The fact that, you know, Nikki, I know this is a lot of the drug talking, but she was fairly cruel to Lorna.
Yeah, she was very
Morello.
Incredibly disrespectful of her own choices, wanting to be faithful to her husband, even though they can't have sex with each other. And she was very mean to her.
Do you think
it was the drugs talking? Because heroin and painkiller addictions make you just a cruel, cruel person.
Sure. Sure, because all you care about, I mean, that was kind of Nikki's backstory. Like, she would sell out anything.
It's just very, like, short-tempered and instant gratification.
Do you think that, because the other thing is, it seems like it's re-triggered Morello's I don't know what you call what she has, her psychosis.
Yeah.
But her insane jealousy and...
I don't know, like stalkerish tendencies? What is that?
But I mean, that's not a diagnosis.
What's the opposite of Stockholm syndrome?
There actually is one. There's a... I forget what it's called, but there is an opposite of Stockholm. Because I saw this coming a mile away as soon as she talked her sister into going to spy on Vinny. I'm like, either... She, because they set this plot line that she's kind of frustrated with her husband and doesn't have exactly the greatest love life, etc.
Yeah.
That either they're going to cheat together or Morello's just going to suspect them. And it seems like they're going down the latter route.
And wouldn't it be just like this show for that to happen, for her to suspect them and everyone thinks she's crazy, but then it actually turns out to be true?
Man, I don't know, because like
I'm gearing up for that to happen.
You can't go down that well too much. Like, I felt like that was the problem with Alex.
Why don't you ask season 7 of Weeds?
Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, yes, if she wants to kind of dilute the impact of those storylines, but I felt like that was almost too much. I don't know why you have to apologize to Alex that you didn't believe her when she's... It's like... If I had a friend that came to me and said, hey, there's vampires after me, I would think that they were cuckoo.
Or more realistically, if Lolly turned out to be telling the truth, which, guess what? She is.
How so?
You know, when she goes to Healy.
Yeah.
And she's telling her story about the government, and there's a body buried in the garden. Well,
oh, yes, you're right. You're right.
It's like, it's like at the end of the story, it turns out that Lolly does have government agents after her.
Ugh.
And us feeling like fools for not believing her.
No, I won't.
I mean, it's all, I mean, just.
Because I'm saying, if you came to me and said you were attacked by a vampire, I would be sympathetic, but I would be thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to see a professional about how to deal with my girlfriend. And if it turns out that later you actually were attacked by an immortal undead creature that was sucking your blood, I wouldn't feel bad for not believing you. Because that's so far out of what
then you're a fucking monster.
No, don't make it about me. It's the vampire. That's the problem, not me and not you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's some shit is just, you can be forgiven for, not going down that path because
but
she did
you
seem
apologize?
Like a paranoid, crazy
just
person.
Just
of course
open
I
up
would.
The dialogue.
Of course I would.
Okay.
Of course I would. But when I'm an asshole on the other side of a glass screen looking at these characters, I think, I don't know that apology is really necessary.
No. We don't know it's not.
So, shall we talk about...
it wasn't just that her not believing her. She was also actively, like... campaigning against her.
Well, and she was having this Australian piece.
Was having this secret romance where she was pretending like it wasn't that. And
I just remember last season being just like thinking they were both like pretty insufferable.
I mean, the whole triangle was a mess.
Yeah, let's not do that again.
Okay.
Shall we talk about Lolly's backstory? Because I thought that was a really meaty subplot. And also the young actor who played young Lolly...
Yes.
Was phenomenal.
Yeah, she's really good.
The way, like, I don't know that she looked a lot like Laura Petty. Is it Laura Petty?
Lori Petty.
Lori Petty. I don't know that she looked a lot like her, but with the big glasses and the kind of like the general facial structure.
She looked like her before she lived hard life on the streets before ending up in prison.
But the attitude and the voice was incredible from the, like, and that's the sad thing is, like, I can see her getting like a journalism degree and being fine because a lot of these mental illness creep up in your mid-20s. And here's the thing, like, a long time ago, I would have looked at a person like Lolly and being like, well, these are your consequences. You know, you indulged in these fantasies and you didn't get yourself help. And now look at you, you're on the street and now you're resisting.
But here's
another. This shows you the story. It's like, what did she do wrong in life that led her to being in prison?
Here's another example of
how would you, with your personal responsibility and whatnot, how would you avoid making the mistakes that she made to get into prison?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, psychosis does things to people.
Right. Right. And we all say, like, anytime there's a tragic
shooting.
And
nobody wants to end up in psych because psych is a terrible place for people.
Which I think is interesting.
You can't even imagine.
I know. It's interesting that they make psych be, like, the fucking, inner sanctums of
it's
Mordor.
It's worse than the shoe.
Yes. Yeah, that's how they treat it. Are you trying to say that it's actually not that bad and they've made it out to be? Or is it, like...
Psych?
Yeah.
No, I mean, okay. It's just, have we ever seen it?
No,
because
but like
the way
I know
people
that...
talk about it, like Sister Ingalls would rather
yes.
go to the shoot than go to psych.
And also the same thing with like when they were trying to keep Suzanne safe, the women were all like, oh,
we can't let her go
to
yeah.
psych again. So yeah. yeah.
Even Lolly, who clearly needs some sort of psychiatric help,
yeah.
nobody wants her to go there. Not yeah. even Healy.
And
the
I just,
biggest garbage person ever.
I just think that's person. Interesting that in this country, you know, we are always bemoaning like, oh, look at all, you know, how many veterans we have that are homeless. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, and mentally ill people are every time there's a shooting, a lot of people say, well, what we really need is not gun control, but to do something about mental health. And it would be nice for, I guess, us to actually do something about that. But on the other hand, I honestly don't know what you can do. I would love to hear if, like, you are out there and you have, like, some really solid social programs you could pitch to make a difference.
I mean,
I would like to hear them.
It's still such a stigmatized thing. Like, if you were to tell someone that you go see a psychiatrist every week, well, then they would just look at you like you're crazy.
Well, not only that, but, like, a person like Lolly, when their voices are telling them not to take their medicine,
yeah.
and when people, like, she had a solid friend, I wasn't sure if that was a sister or a college roommate or just a caring coworker that was trying to get her into programs that might help her. And again, you could see how kind of insufficient they were,
right.
but trying to do something, and the voices are telling her to run, and then she runs
and she's on
the streets.
And have you ever noticed that kids who get on this kind of medication, it seems to like dull down their personalities?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it needs a lot of work.
Yeah. And then the interface where the police are called to deal with this problem. And all they see is this person who's being like, oh, you don't have a coffee license and you're doing it. And,
right.
You know, and even if she'd gotten away from that encounter, the fact that there was this condo coming in, so the place that she and her other band of broken misfit toys were kind of
being rushed out of. Yeah.
Yeah, they had some kind of stability.
Right.
And that's going to be taken from them. And it's, you know, again, I also feel sympathy for people that are trying to live their lives in a neighborhood and there's a big homeless camp in it. Like,
yeah.
Again, that's why I'm saying this is this huge problem that we kind of whistle past a graveyard on. And it seems like if there's going to be a solution, it's going to be expensive and it's going to be hard and it's going to be complicated. And yet people just want to say, oh, man, what are we going to do about all this underserved mental health?
Well, we're making more money on selling drugs and locking people up in prison than we are actually helping them and employing veterans at said prison.
Sure, sure.
But her shake stick seemed to work out for her.
Yeah,
she should get another one of those.
It'll probably
be considered a weapon.
Until the CO is considered a weapon and she gets sent to the shoe.
Yeah.
Or psych. Lolly. I did love to shout out to Amiga. Mm-hmm. That was the computer I lusted for when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was stuck on my Commodore 64 and 128, yeah. and some of my friends had an Amiga.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, man, so sweet. So sweet. what else do we want to talk about with... are we done talking about Lolly?
Yeah.
We're not talking about the time... What did you think about her and Healy in the time machine?
That was sweet. He let her keep it, which is nice.
What do you think about the...
Someone's hiding weapons in there, which is fine.
What do you think about one of the things that led from the time machine is the conversation with Coates and Pensatucky? Like,
yes.
This arc was, I don't even know what the fuck to think about it. And that's one of the things is this show does so brilliantly is it really confronts you with thorny issues. You have a woman who did not appreciate the attention and the relationship she was forming. This acquaintance rape happens.
So I was going to compare this earlier, but now seems like a good time.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between a woman who makes a racist video that is, you know, broadly funny for most of the population in the 80s and, say, a young man who raped a woman drunkenly once in college? Like, do they deserve to be punished for the rest of their lives
That's what I was talking to Pilani about. Like, what do you do with these men who are now realizing that, number one, past a certain age, like, you're literally talking about changing rules of the game. You're like, let's say you're having, their guys are fighting dogs, and suddenly you pass a law that says you can't fight dogs anymore, and then you arrest everyone that was fighting dogs legally.
Right.
Like, is that justice? Like, in the 80s, I don't, I, when did... When did terms like date rape and acquaintance rape and the sanctity of consent start to really take hold?
I don't know, and I feel like we're probably still have it way backwards as opposed to 30 years in the future.
Sure, but like you've got this whole class of men who like probably
I just like the idea of enthusiastic consent all the time.
Agreed, and that's certainly the standard that I embrace. But I'm saying that like a guy like Coates who, and even Pennsylvania didn't initially. She's like consider this to be rape. What is justice?
I mean, she was a victim of obvious rape, and that was obvious rape by all standards,
yes,
I think.
Yes, that was complete, just straight up garden variety street crime rape.
But I think it's way too soon for her to accept an apology. I think that he says almost verbatim, I don't know why it happened or I don't know how it happened. Like, he needs help.
Yes, true.
He took his aggression on a woman out by jamming his penis inside of her.
Sure.
That's not okay. What if he did do it to Maritza? What if he and Maritza got close?
Yeah.
That's her name, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems likely that it'll happen to another person.
If he doesn't understand why it happened,
how many people
how is he
has
going
it happened
to make
to
sure
before?
It's never
going
to happen again? Yeah.
Right.
And I guess...
True,
what...
he really likes her, but that doesn't make it okay.
Yeah, and I was trying to get to like where is this end game going, and like should he turn himself in?
I think it's up to maybe Pennsylvania and how she wants to deal with it.
So it's like, look, I'm you apologize and you say I accept whatever consequences come my way for this.
I guess so. I mean, as long as we find a way to not make it happen in the future, if he thinks that he can't control himself, then yes, he needs to turn himself in. If he's willing to get whatever kind of help he needs to deal with his aggression, especially towards women.
What do you think they're trying to say with Big Boo, who is saying...
She's on the opposite end of the
spectrum.
Yeah,
like, look, if you let this scumbag back in your life or give him any kind of quarter, then I'm done with you forever. I'm withdrawing my emotional support.
It's a very impassioned plea from a good friend.
Yes.
I can't say that I would behave any differently if a good friend of mine had been raped and then was suddenly accepting this person.
And not saying they're going to go back, but you can kind of see like the slippery slope that might lead to that decision.
Would you say it was consensual but complicated? Complicated but non-consensual?
I mean, it is
an incredibly complicated situation. And thank goodness Orange is the New Black is putting that stuff out there for us to talk about. Because I don't know. You don't know.
Honestly, it's the first time I've ever seen anything like this in the popular... Because it's something I've been wondering about for like a year or two. Like, okay, yeah. We get men on board with this new standard of enthusiastic consent, what do we do about the generation of men who have been raping women?
I mean, just like there's self-defense classes for women out there to not get raped, how about we start having classes out there for young men to not rape?
Well, not just that, but I'm talking about even beyond that, what do you do with the men who already have? Because I was talking about with Pialani, I don't know if you heard that podcast, but like... what do you do if you find out 10 years after the fact that, oh, I raped a woman in college? Holy shit. What does that mean for me?
I actually did read a story. I think it was a Rolling Stone or something like that.
And
a man actually did that.
Mm-hmm.
It was 10 years later. He said, I'm sorry I raped you. He looked up her address and he sent her the letter and she turned him into the police and he went to jail.
Okay.
I mean, I guess it just is... between the victim and the perpetrator.
Yeah.
And
that's the thing. I even hate sometimes talking about this because I feel like I'm opening myself up to the accusation of, oh, you're turning this into the men again. But I feel like that, I mean, hell, Orange New Black is considering that angle. And I think it's a valuable angle to...
I think it's too black and white to say all rapists must go to jail for forever. I mean, it's not black and white. Each and every crime is... it's different.
It does feel like that there needs to be some kind of thing like, you know, like all robbery is not the same. They need to have like,
I mean, it's,
and maybe there is like, I'm
I
not
think
familiar
it's
with
different
the law
because
but
it's just such a personal thing.
I get it. But there is difference between like, I mean, there should
grand
be aggravators,
theft auto,
right?
And
like if I go to a liquor store and say, give me your cash drawer and they do, and I don't have any weapon, That's different from me going there and pointing a gun at someone's face, and that's different from me shooting them in the face and taking their register.
Right.
Whereas there's this weird, and I'm not sure I'm comfortable with treating, like wanting to treat every kind of rape as the same. And I'm not trying to condone or saying that those
is the same thing. We are absolutely on the same page. They shouldn't be treated the same.
Right.
You shouldn't be able to be drugged and be raped behind a dumpster with foreign objects, and then your perpetrator gets 6 months of jail.
Right, right.
I mean, that's where it's not working.
It's tough to talk about that stuff, too, because right now we're still in the mode of taking all this shit way too lightly.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But maybe we do have to, you know, but I feel like there's going... I mean, that's the thing. Like, of course there'll be men that are they'll get ground up in this. And their lives will be ruined. But the way you have to look at that is on the other side, they've been ruining the lives of women for generations.
Yes.
So
life is not fair.
And it's a pendulum sometimes.
But when we stop talking about it, that's when there will be a problem.
Yeah.
Woo.
That
you want to talk about Linda?
Who's Linda? Okay.
Caputo's girlfriend.
Yes. Let us talk about
Linda from Purchasing?
Linda from Purchasing. Boy, she really... I mean, here's another complicated one. Like, she really fucked him over with this... well, the company fucked him over, and she's a tool of the company. And there was even... Like, she said something that I thought was right on. Like, wait a second. Why are you saying you when I'm an employee of the same company that you are?
Sure. Well,
and I know
not
it's,
really.
Well, yeah, really.
I mean,
really.
Think about their actions from last season. MCC absorbed this prison. Joe Caputo has been there since the beginning, caring about the place, maybe caring about himself slightly more.
Did he not throw Sophia Brissett into the hole? And is he resisting any attempt to bring
what
any
is he
going to
do?
Subject? I don't know.
He could like quit. I'm saying,
he could.
Like I'm saying,
he could write an anonymous letter to the local newspaper.
I think he values himself slightly above the people of the prison,
and I think. That's the same thing. Linda is on that same spectrum.
Nah,
she's just a
Linda
bit
doesn't
further.
Have to deal with
she's
that.
She's never
every
worked
day.
In a prison.
Exactly. She doesn't have to deal with that every day. That's why she's the faceless corporation. Joe Caputo is the guy that just wants to make things better, but he also wants to keep Linda from Purchasing happy.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the same woman who gives him that speech where you're all on board, and then she dumps a bunch of salt into a sauce.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of person are we dealing with?
I know. And then
she
pulls a gun on Sophia's wife.
Crystal. Brissett.
And I'm like, this is fucking nuts. And then you get inside, and I thought Caputo was going to be like, this is over. And instead he's like, I'm so hot. And I'm like, that is very Orange is the New Black, and that's very Caputo, but holy shit, I get emotional whiplash from the show.
I mean, what bothered me about this was that Linda made this point, like, you have to separate me from the office. When we come home, we're on a date. But it's not like that for Joe, because he's got the family of prisoners knocking at his door and his personal hours.
Yeah. Also,
it's just not that cut and dry.
Also, like, I feel like Caputo knows how to make fucking spaghetti sauce, and I know for sure that you don't put a quarter cup of salt in it.
Well,
so, like, I do feel like Linda's kind of a, but that might be a little racist because I hear Caputo and I think he can make, right? But my partner's Italian as fuck and he can't cook to save his goddamn life.
That's like saying I've got a black friend so I can use the N-word. That does not work. Nope. And he's not even that Italian. He's just got an Italian last name.
You don't know him like I know him. Anyway.
Racist.
What should we... do we feel... Because that's the thing. Like, if we want to go following the Sophia hole, it seems like Gloria and Sister Ingalls have got this conspiracy to try to, from the inside, blow this thing wide open.
Sure. Wait, let's finish talking about Linda first.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were. She pulled a gun on
Crystal,
and I'm like,
she's got
this
big plan for vocational training and to start a labor camp. And all of the Whispers girls get reassigned to construction duty.
Yeah. And it is a chain gang. And I love I love the kind of Cool Hand Luke prison chain gang music that they played in all the scenes.
Yeah. Did you notice the shot of the very pregnant woman on the chain gang?
I did not. You pointed it out to me.
Walking across the frame. We rewound it two times and you're like, maybe she's just fat. No, very pregnant.
Not say that.
Those are exactly
they
your words.
They were not my exact words.
They were.
I said, maybe she's just chubby. And no, I'm like, no,
not
no,
what
she's
she
definitely
said.
Pregnant.
very pregnant. She's working hard hours, so the Chen gang does not discriminate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can get out of it if you're an elderly woman with a heart condition, which I guess that's the very least you can do. Exempt old women with heart problems. And,
didn't two other women raise their hands for no reason?
But they were clearly full of shit.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. He just took the one woman.
Uh-huh.
Pregnant lady didn't raise her hand, so.
Yeah, well,
that's on her.
Right? The baby's going to be born with a slipped disc and a terrible back from all this backbreaking labor.
Incredible biceps and a farmer's hand.
I'm going to be born with a full burly forearms and a farmer's tan.
Yep.
The chain, and that's the thing, is like the banality of all this evil, like the fact that Linda has seized this idea of, and she even says, like, you're the first person to think of using education as a form of control. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. And then she continues this tirade and says that we've got to call it a school so we don't have to pay them the 11 cents an hour. And I'm like, my God.
Yep. They go for paying. My God.
What is the difference between slavery and 11 cents an hour? Do you have to pay taxes on the 11 cents, probably? You probably, you know.
Yeah. I mean, well, they're going from $1 an hour to nothing.
Sure.
So it's extra hard.
Well, even $1 an hour is a fucking joke.
Can that be legal?
I think it, I mean...
To not give them any means of... I mean, to have opportunities for other people to make commissary money.
You know, that was my question is... There's a lot of questions I have about these prison jobs. And one of them is, you know, is it really legal to have a compulsory class that people must attend that benefits, like, that actually benefits in a material capital way to this place making money and not even pay them the pittance that they pay prisoners?
I don't know.
Like,
I've never
it seems like this is a scandal
prison.
In waiting. And also, like, I thought, like, when the crystals, I'm assuming all this shit is ripped from the headlines, but like that was the other question in my back of mind is like, really, can a privatized prison put someone in some kind of protective custody and not have to have pictures of them, no paper trail, deny their families any explanation of why this is happening? Like, is that really shit that goes on in this country? I mean, that's some fucking North Korean gulag shit.
You just mixed up two different...
Whatever.
I mean, at least they're not in psych.
Well, what else do we want to talk about? Are we done?
That's all I got for Linda. Just wanted to get that out.
Okay. Do we want to talk about Tasty and Black Cindy and what's the woman with the camera? What's
Judy.
Her name?
Judy. Oh. The one with the...
That's wearing the... Not, it's not a burqa, but
I think it's Erica is her name. I don't know, though.
Allison. What did you think of Black Cindy, Allison, and Tasty's plan and the whole plot with Judy King?
I thought it was pretty hilarious how they were trying to stage this photo of her. And there's a picture of Black Cindy chasing Judy
with her arm up raised, look like she's about to deliver a
smackdown.
Right,
and they have no knowledge of the puppet show fiasco.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was just
and
pure
Suzanne's
comedy.
Reaction from like, oh, puppets, to like, I don't think I like this puppet show, to yes. to going down with the puppet, with the sock puppet, you know, doing the
yeah,
whatever the song it was.
Thing. Yeah.
Oh, God.
So good.
I thought that was really, really funny, especially like when Poussey, I thought that was another conversation where, she, you know, like Judy King's like, look, I get it. Like, I'm from the South and I had a whole bunch of wrong ideas about what was funny and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like a lot of these, you know, racist and sexist and whatever jokes, it's not like they're not funny. It's when you become aware of the expense, the joke, who the joke,
yes.
it comes at expense, and you come with empathy of that person, that's when they become no longer funny.
Right.
Because else they're just funny stories that you tell, and they're funny.
I mean, there's something
like, oh, I
like,
didn't know this hurts real people.
Right. I mean, there's something about self-depreciating Jewish humor that Sarah Silverman does and
sure.
a racist puppet show where you're not quite aware. Like, the victim is not in on the joke.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Jones seems to be really benefiting from this, though. Yoga Jones?
Oh, Yoga Jones. Sure, sure. Well, and that's a little interesting thing, that she has gone from... You're this capitalist pig, and you've made your backs on the these less fortunate people to, oh, I can use my association with you to get a seltzer machine.
Yeah. And then she doesn't want people in her bunk anymore because she thinks they're going to steal from her.
Oh, that was interesting. And she's got she's like, what are you now? Who's the racist? She goes, well, it's because it's prison steal and people in prison steal. But I thought it was interesting that it's really it's naked jealousy. She doesn't want anyone horning in on her good deal.
Yeah, I agree. A little bit of hypocrisy from the Yoga Jones.
But I thought it was funny when, you know, Pooh said the double whiplash of Pooh say, like, well, you're a racist. Okay, well, I guess you're pretty apologetic and open and friendly about it, so I'll go to bat for you. And then she's like, why are you trying to beat her down? And all the other women are like, why would we beat down an old woman? One punch and she's done for.
Yeah, but she's also double secret racist because she came to Pooh say to speak on behalf of all the black women in the prison.
Sure.
And she calls her out on that, which I thought was funny.
And you're the good one, and like, it's like the whole you people thing. Like, you can really fall down into a hole of unintentional offense pretty quickly.
Yes. So they go on this cell phone hunt because of her.
Yeah, yeah, because Judy King, as we've learned, she's a pretty free spirit. She was all about, you know, pimping out the paparazzi to get these women some money. She goes and plants a big kiss on Black Cindy's face, which then Caputo, of course, is enraged about.
Yeah.
The bear, the giant. I'm saying this because Piscatella. I can't remember. Piscatella. I was going to say Skipatella or something like that.
No. Nope.
Piscatella is all up in an uproar because, you know, he sees this as all just completely lacking discipline.
Yep.
Deputizes Loose Check to find the phone, which we find out a couple scenes later that he's actually holding the phone.
Yes, in his pocket.
The smoking gun phone in his pocket.
She could keep it in her room. No one would search that room. She could have a laptop and like a TV in there. Nobody would care.
No one's going to toss her bunk. That's a really good, solid point.
Yeah. But
I think the reason he might have the phone is because he's actively the one that's brokering this deal with the...
And I also think,
trying to get the money.
The same way that Judy sort of blanched at the seltzer machine, mm-hmm. I think she's also generally just trying to conform.
Yeah.
And fit in with everyone here. But at the same time, enjoying her privileges.
Do you think that there's something not on the up and up about Loose Checks? Because I felt like that I'm supposed to understand in episode 8 and 9 that he's kind of dragging his feet about the money. And I wouldn't put it past him to take the $50,000 and just like just pocket it. Because what are they going to do? What are they going to do? Say that he was in on this whole plot and that they were trying to do this illegal funds and have this. I mean, they're prisoners. They have no rights and they're not going to believe. I mean, that's how Loose Check fucked over Nikki last season.
I mean, the same could be said of Judy.
How so?
What reason does she have to share the money? Maybe Loose Check deposits it in her commissary, and then she starts to wield that commissary money power.
That's true. But on the other hand, she could have essentially unlimited money deposit. I mean, she could do that anyway. She could be the prison sugar mama if she wanted to.
But yeah, she could also be a couple $1,000s richer. I mean, if you had, how much money do you have in your account?
Well,
would
so
you
there,
like to double that?
I guess. there are definitely a class of rich people that are very much like that. Like, why do poor people need money? They're poor. But there's also others that are like, you know what, whatever. This $50,000 means nothing to them. I'm hoping that Judy is the latter case. I'm really wanting to like her.
I think it's a put on. That's my official prediction.
Okay.
I just don't like her. I don't like her face. I don't like Judy. I'm not a fan of
Judy
King.
I noticed that. We're certainly at odds with that. We both still hate Piper, though, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's something we can be strong on.
Loose Check finds Loose Check and McCullough, the female guard, find a shit ton of cell phones in the strangest of places.
Yeah, that was really interesting, entertaining.
Yeah, all the things they came up with.
Reminded me a lot of Piper's sweep for all the contraband.
She was looking for a cell phone.
She's looking for a cell phone, too, and it seems like that's the thing. If you go look for cell phones, that's where all the bodies are buried in prison.
Yeah, and all the shanks, the Jolly Rancher shanks.
Yeah. At the end of this, Loose Check presents his findings to Skipatella, Crapatella, Capella,
Nutella,
Cabella,
uh-huh.
Nutella,
yeah,
Fig Newton. He presents it to Piscatella, and Piscatella seems like he's proud of him. But then there's something about his smile that I'm not buying.
Where
he
this
says,
guy's
"You should. You, it's clearly that you should work for Game. Do you feel like that he's got like some kind of crosshairs on Luscheck now?"
Well, yeah, he was generally praising him, and just as Luscheck was soaking it in, he's like, "You deserve to get paid minimum wage in a sweaty game store."
Yeah, you look like a sweaty game store nerd.
Yeah, so.
I ain't talking shit about any of the fine people who work at GameStop.
I can't get a read on this guy.
That's got to be its own kind of nightmare.
Yep. I can't get a read on this guy.
Me either.
He seems like he's taken in by Piper's charm and actually buys into her idea at the same time telling her that she's not cute and it's not going to work.
I know. I want to like this guy. And he does take some principled stands, but I think he's also...
But he's blind. A dick sometimes.
If you're dealing with max security prisoners and people, and I mean, you've seen the documentaries and you've seen the like inside the prison, like it's a pretty tough, brutal place. It's probably hard not to generalize people based on your experience if you're having shit thrown at you and you're having people attack you and you're having to constantly bust people from doing things that are, you know, it's the Stanford prison experiment in real life. So like I might.
So you're saying it's an actual prison?
Yes.
My goodness, these are groundbreaking views.
It's not experimental. It's escape the laboratory. I feel like I want to like this guy. Like I would like having a beer with this guy. But on the other hand, he would say some things over beers, and I'd be like, I don't know about this. You know,
I don't think so.
Like, hey, we are stopping and frisking all the Dominican and Puerto Rican and Mexican and Honduran and all the and Chilean ladies. And I'd be like,
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they're up to no good.
Finish your beer and you go home.
Yeah, look at this guy. He's a monster. I'm not going to call him out. And that's, you know, Maria is running a no-shit prison gang, and it's starting to shoot. She's kind of the V of season 4.
Can we talk about, before we get into that craziness, because it's
okay, that's gonna
locked
be a lot,
and
sure.
loaded. Can we just quickly talk about Aleda?
Sure. Also, because I don't know when else we're going to mention it, I really enjoy seeing the scenes of Caputo running into his former charges. Like when he found Belle as a crossing guard.
Yeah.
And she's got that little, like, I'm surprised you even stopped, you son of a bitch. And then she's like, yeah, on the side. She's kind of bringing her prison guard mentality to crossing guard.
Yes.
Anyway, continue.
So Aleda's getting out, and she needs to find something she's good at. And Judy King gives her the idea to do nails.
Dark purple. I mean, I guess they were flawless in their execution, but dark purple with the gold contrast,
that's the reason why you can't start your own nail business.
And I'm sure all the women of the world really care about my opinion about nails. So,
we don't.
Yeah.
So she has some flawless.
Wait, are you saying that all women don't owe it to me to look their best and cater to my personal expectations for the beauty? Is that what you're saying?
You're starting to catch on, sir.
This is some sedition. This is some sedition you're talking about. I'm going to have to report you to the penis police.
Like I haven't been punished enough already. Daya is basically begging to spend time with her mom. There's always this wall that Aleda has up constantly. Constantly can't for one second let Daya have an emotional moment with her before she leaves her for who knows how long.
I feel like it's a two-way street, but on this also I feel like that Daya came by that honestly. I mean, I remember her backstory last year, but you know, she is just as brutal. But that's the thing, like her mom taught her to be this way.
Yeah,
she comes up with some bubbly overly optimistic idea, and she just, her first instinct is to crush it as cruelly as she can.
Exactly.
And then she's not wrong. Like, you do need all those things. But, you know, that's what Aleda would say to a young Daya who wants to be a cartoonist.
Well, I feel like...
A young Daya who wanted to be a cartoonist.
But would you say that Daya feels like she needs to parent Aleda a little bit?
Yes.
Because she does have bubbly ideas, but I think it's your job as a parent to both ground and encourage those ideas.
Yes. No, and she's being the exact kind of parent. So for her to say that
I have nice nails, so therefore I can just go buy a place and hire girls, and then you're all set. I mean, what were you going to say?
No, I can see why Di is angry, though, because also this is her hope to get her child out of institutional care.
Exactly.
Like, you need to get your shit together, and if you come out there and like, oh, I'm going, all I need to do is worry about how good the receptionist's nails are.
And then get hit a bump in the road and give up completely, which seems like something she'd do.
Yeah. Or worse yet, get some kind of illegal underground shop going that's going to be used as a drug front because you're too stupid to know when that's happening.
Who's to say it won't?
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. And then you can wind right back up in here. So it's a toxic relationship. And I don't know. It would, on the one hand, it would warm my heart to see a realistic, plausible way that you can roll back these decades of hostility and toxicity from a personal standpoint. But I've yet to see. It's a rare story that actually convinces me that that's something that can be done.
Right. She also just charges Gloria to look after Daya.
Mm-hmm. Which I do like the payoff of that, that, like, you know, they've been at odds a lot, but, you know, Gloria and Alita, I think, see kind of eye to eye, and that they do care about their kids and they don't do everything perfectly, but, you know, they do have that thing in common.
Yeah.
And it's a genuine thing. So there's a couple of minor plot points, like the poop sleuthing.
Oh.
Nikki blew the... I mean, there was that that we could talk a bit about. There was Nikki's fantastic welcome back party. It was Nikki to the max and back, the theme. I thought that was awesome.
Here's what I've got. I've got the Maritza, Maria, Blanca sort of mixed together.
Ooh.
As they spell out. And then I've got Boo and Pensatucky's thing, which we've already talked about. I've got Alex and Piper... aspiring to get a burger, and then I've got Sister Ingalls getting locked up.
Okay, well, let's talk about the meatiest of that is probably the Blanca.
Yeah.
Which is funny because she kept on getting called Bianca, and I'm like, oh, shit, I've got that wrong for like three seasons now.
You know what's funny is my autocorrect even changed Blanca to Bianca.
Right, I had to override the same thing, and when they said that, I'm like, oh, son of a bitch, I've been saying it wrong this whole time, and then they kind of talked about where she's like, oh, yeah, the old lady's... saw it, thought it was an eye, and she liked it better that way.
Yeah.
Blanca, so why did this story make her think about the civil disobedience by stinking up the joint? Is it because that she power-fucked the Dario guy, and that cowed the old woman into being less of a miserable person?
I don't think she's less of a miserable person.
That's the thing. Like, this story hasn't broken bad yet, right?
Right.
So I've got to be patient to see how it's going to flip. I mean, is she going to, like, smother this old woman with a pillow or something?
She could. She's in prison for a reason.
Yeah.
And she's still with Dario.
Dario. Like, is this old lady, like, mean enough to, like, throw herself down a flight of stairs and then...
No, when she could actually die.
That's... Yeah, but, I mean, she... Like, the way she talks about her child, it seems like, oh, woe is me, this child's terrible. But if you read between the lines, I felt like this person has got some well-meaning concerns for her mother's health and her mother's age and the fact that she's a prickly kind of terrible person.
Exactly.
And her mother is twisting this into her daughter just wanting her to die and to get her house.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is sad. That's always sad when you see that shit get twisted up.
Right.
Are you surprised how well Blanca cleaned up?
You mean how well Blanca shaved her unibrow?
I mean, no, I mean, I don't see fixed a her difference. Hair and like, no, I mean, and also she's always got her face set like in this
caveman type.
Yeah, very Cro-Magnon with the
yeah.
And like, I felt like it's almost a completely different character when you saw her on the outside and she's making the moves on.
Yeah.
On Dario
or making Diablo. The moves indeed, Diablo.
Who's the hottest? Who wore Dario the best this week? Dario Naharis or Dario the long guy?
Daria the Lawn Guy.
I mean, Daria the Lawn Guy got it on.
Yeah, I'm really feeling the Lawn Guy.
Like, if Dario Naharis could bring that kind of thing, maybe Danny's like, you know what? Fuck the political alliances. Come with me. I'm bringing you to King's Landing.
That's a mistress / gardener you keep around.
Yeah, yeah. Blanca doesn't go to Westeros without Dario, that's for sure.
Yeah. But did I say this? She still has Diablo, right?
Right, because she's always, yes.
That's how her story started. That's she's always right. in the bathroom stall texting, talking dude, about sexting, Diablo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I just now put that together.
Yeah, yeah. She still got him. So.
Well, you go, Blanca.
Bianca.
Blanca.
Blanca. So I can only assume that relationship lasted a long time, or her comeuppance, what have you, is coming soon. Maybe the old woman just bruised herself and said that she beats me.
That's what I was getting at. I wonder if she's hateful enough to do that and get the final revenge on her.
Yes.
Or like, is she hateful enough to like take a bunch of pills and leave a note that incriminates the live-in nurse nanny?
I don't think that revenge on someone maybe is worth sacrificing your own life ever.
Yeah. I know, but it's like the whole Gone Girl thing. Like,
this old woman is not going to fake her own death.
No, no. Nope. And then take a long road trip and reconsider everything and go back to Ben Affleck.
No.
Bianca Affleck.
I mean, who's the first one to find?
B. Affleck.
Who's the first one to find the old lady?
Probably Bianca.
Bianca. So if that happened, would she destroy the evidence?
Just strap yourself in. I'm going to refer to her interchangeably, Blanca and Bianca. The show has done it to me. Like, I tried to get right with the pronunciation, and the show is just fucking
fine.
With me.
It's fine. I don't care. I know what you're saying.
I was just making a joke, man. I was trying to put a positive spin on my disability. But I'm sorry it makes you feel uncomfortable.
Do you want to talk about Maritza getting out of the game?
Is she?
Did she call
Maria's bluff?
She blew up the game, so there's not really much she can do. And I'm pretty sure she's not going to put herself in a position where she's going to have to eat a baby mouse again.
Oh, my God. Well, the thing is, I mean, she's out of the frying pan into the fire because this guy is straight up insane.
Yes, and he doesn't give a shit. Spanish,
and he doesn't give a shit about her lever. Like, because she's like, I don't got anything on me. Well, you're still gonna have to eat a baby mouse or a bunch of dead flies.
Would you eat the mouse or the flies?
I'd eat the dead flies. There's no fucking way I'm gonna eat a living baby mouse. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. I'd eat dead flies.
I would eat dead lives, too.
I'd eat dead lives. Dead lives instead of live lives.
Does it show what she chooses?
I don't think so. But I thought it's funny because I like the game. Like, gun to your head. Like, that's a fun game to play when you're bored with your friends. And, like, you know, how extreme. And you kind of learn stuff about it. And this guy just came and fucked it all up. And to what end? Like, is this... Jesus Christ. Is this a story of them all looking at Coates? And it's actually this fucking guy who's going to...
Right, it's like Coates is the good guy now? Respectable guard?
Because if you had to choose, like, gun to your head, would you choose playing a bizarre, you're a waggling duck game? Or would you be forced with a gun to your head to eat flies and baby mice? Hey everybody, Aaron here with a brief programming note. Around right here, we had a mishap with Cecily's microphone, which took us about 8 minutes to notice, and it led to the audio on her side dropping out completely, and I've done what I could with post-processing to recover it. I think the result is listenable, but it's not nearly as good as the rest of the podcast, so for the next 8 minutes or so, while we have this discussion about the baby mice and the dead flies and humps, it gets a little bit rocky in the audio. If you can muddle through, great. If not, maybe skip ahead 8 to 9 minutes to the resumption of the because we found the problem and fixed it, but it was too late to save the 9 minutes that we lost. So I just want to give you a note and return you back to the slightly diminished form of the podcast for the next few minutes. I mean, it's hard to believe that there'd be something worse than fucking Coates that would happen to one of these women.
Gun to my head. Flies.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are they going to do? What's he going to shoot her?
I don't know.
What's he going to shoot a
I don't know. Well, what if he, what if he says, right, right. I was in here and I was, you know, getting whatever they do, however they justify their trips to get drunk at the noon. And I left the door open and she came in and I turned around and she had a steak knife. And what was I going to do? How, why does that guy have a gun anyway? I didn't think any of those guys carried guns. Like that the guns were all in like some special armory or something. Cause like this guy now is he needs to get got. He needs the giant needs to regulate this guy.
Yeah. So yeah, he's got nothing on her, so I'm not sure where they go from here. Does the terror continue? Is she just going to live in fear of everything she says from now on? Her and Flocka can't have fun anymore.
Is she going to go back to Maria for protection? And Maria's going to figure out a way to protect her, but then she's going to be back in the game? Like, is that going to be the...
I don't think so.
She's going back to the frying pan, essentially?
I would.
Well, also, like, I don't know that Maria's done with her either, because you're right, she blew up the game. And just because she let her walk out now, like, what... How does Maria survive if she, as the boss, allows something like that to happen? I mean, that's the whole problem of criminal institutions, right?
And that's exactly the conversation they had over the bathroom sink.
Yes.
She says, yeah, I don't know why she didn't say this, but she did come to her. She said, I want out. She said, no.
Right.
You can't get out.
But
and then she comes, and then she blows it up and she says, why didn't you come to me? Well, she did.
Mm-hmm.
She did.
Yes.
But it's always supposed to be serving Maria's self-interest, and I think this is where she's learning that it's not going to work out so well.
I just wonder, why do you think Maria's done with her? Just because she let her walk out of that bathroom?
What else is she going to do with her?
Beat her to fuck up.
Well, why?
Because to make an example of her.
To who?
To the girl, to the other... No, to the other women in her institute. Like, if you're thinking of betraying me, if you're thinking of putting your own self-interest above... our self-interest. I mean, this is the arc. I mean, she's essentially going down the same road her dad did.
Right.
And I don't see her. I mean, that's what I'm getting. Like, I feel like, I don't know. It's 50-50 whether Maria is just completely out or whether, I'm sorry, Maritza, or whether she's going to get pulled back in somehow.
Yeah, I think she's out because she doesn't have a good reason to get back in. Not with the threat of that guy looming.
Okay.
I mean, can you imagine what he would do if he caught her continuing? To smuggle panties out?
Well, no.
Also, while we're talking
about... Well, they've also... It's not just panties. They've moved on to heroin.
Yeah, whatever. While we're talking about it, how is anyone wearing panties or wearing heroin, for that matter, and making it past a stop and frisk? Are they relying on women of other races to carry these products for them?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Like, how is this working?
I don't know. I don't know.
They just wear the panties except when they're traversing that hallway?
Again, they're not... They've moved on from panties, so they might be, like, shoving it up cavities, because there's not a full cavity search. I mean, yeah, I think that's when Maria got busted. Now, those times, she's like, oh, well, if we're going to get this for panties, then fuck it. Let's step up to their good... Let's step up to the hardcore stuff. Let's go legit with this. So, yeah, that's definitely... And the package that she's got, like, it was clearly some kind of drug. It wasn't just panties.
Clearly.
Clearly.
The drug expert.
I know a brick of heroin when I see one. I don't. I have no idea.
You have an idea.
I have an idea, but really, like, if you gave me, like, 10 packs of, like, some kind of powder substance, I would probably... It'd just be sheer chance of whether I could pick out heroin or not. I've progressed to where I could tell a weed from oregano. So, like, I've moved on from, like, where I was at in high school. Now, pencil shavings I still struggle with.
Yeah.
All right, so do we want to, is there anything else that we need to talk about as far as Maria, Maritza, and all that biz?
They do have a smelly business going on.
Well, that's
trying to get past the stop and frisk.
And but that was instantly blown up. Like, okay, this is going to go on for a day or two, but the guards are eventually going to be like, what the fuck?
I don't know, it doesn't look blown up to Miss Bielanka standing on a table.
I think Bielanka is going to...
Civil, disobedient, defiant face.
I think she's going to blow this guy up. Because what is Piscatella going to do when he finds out this thing is going on and she's still staying? Like, even the one guy who is kind of a shitbag, the chubby... The one who was escorting Judy King into the showers and perving on all the fucking women.
Yeah, what a creep.
that guy was like, this is kind of some Abu Ghraib shit. And I'm not really sure that you're making the right call. So I feel like Piscatella is going to come down on this guy like the Wrath of Khan.
That's where I have no idea how to read Piscatella. Is he?
I think so. Because he does seem like he doesn't tolerate this kind of like gross disrespect to the dignity of the prisoners.
And get creative with how you...
Fuck, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Not because it's wrong to send people willy-nilly to the Shu, but because they're out of Shu to send them to.
Yes. Another one more stall short with Sister Ingalls down there.
Wow. Wow. So we talk about Sister Ingalls and her. Like, I thought that was, again, a good example of a B-plot that was amusing. Her trying to be the rebel and the guards just extending her every, like, she's the nun. Like, come on.
Right. She's smoking. Well, I'll share that.
Yeah. Just like, yeah. It's like, you're feeling frisky today. But it's like, come on. Say 10 Hail Marys. Get the hell out of here.
Trying to start a fire with a battery at lunch.
Yeah. And Gloria's like, you know, she first tries to save her, but then she realizes what she's trying to do and she's on board with it. So she's like,
she's all Team Sophia too.
Right, so she's like, well, you got to stop this weak-ass shit, and then she gets punched.
Yeah.
And which I thought was funny, Gloria awkwardly trying to make it, like, you know, good for you, and also...
the situation.
And Sister Ingalls, like, that's right, I'm one of the... I'll hit you again, you Latino, and all the girls were like, oh, you know, it's like they're all flopping like NBA. It was really funny, but then... when Sister Ingalls is confronted with the reality of Shu, and just, she goes to, like, I think, feel her cross, but she finds out that it's been taken from her.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. If they're going to confiscate her cross jewelry, they don't do a full cavity search for someone before they throw them in the Shu?
No, she gets to keep selfing in her vagina. Or butthole.
Yeah. Probably vagina.
Maybe.
Depends on, like, you know, is it like one of those old 80s style car phones? Or is it like one of those little Nokia bricks? And
the new Apple vagina watch.
Right, right. And she's, you know, she's a nun. So, like, you know,
that has no bearing on how big your vagina hole is.
No, but I'm saying, like, the mileage. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, when you see those cars, that it's all highway miles. It's like, oh, it's not, you know, she's a nun. She's never put the rubber on the road, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's just been, it's in showroom condition. That's right. I've never even seen one. What am I talking about? What else do we want to talk about?
Do you want to talk about Alex and Piper trying to trade a hand job for food?
Did we just not talk about it? Like, I feel like that's what else is there to say about it other than, yep, there is some fairly light C plot action of them dreaming about their ultimate cheeseburger and then trying to get whatever the young CO kid to do it for him, and him bringing back the hand job plot line, and them trying to eat a spam sandwich, and I, because they keep on going back and forth between how serious they are about this stuff.
Yeah, so you're right, we've talked about it. Do you have anything else for these episodes? Because I got some feedbacks.
I think that's about it. There's, you know, when we're considering 3 hours all in a unit, there's always some color and some extra texture that we're missing. But I feel like we've covered most of the plots. Do you have feedback that you can send in to orange@baldmove.com or forums.baldmove.com if you'd like to send it in?
I don't have any to send personally, but I have some that was sent to me.
I was saying that, like, you as in, like, you all audience. Okay. You all everybody, if you would.
Y'all send in your feedback. Did you say forums?
Forums.baldmove.com,
yes. Did you say orange@baldmove.com?
I said all those things.
Okay.
You're stalling. You don't have any feedback.
Oh, you're right. All right. Got to make something
full email
up quick.
Cavity search right now. bend over and cough.
All right. This was in my vagina. There were a number of people that wrote in about the VapoRub. Whether this is true or not, the consensus is that VapoRub is used as a sort of cure-all for all ailments in Hispanic households.
So it's like Windex for Greeks?
Exactly. That's what one email I wrote
to. Or Robitussin for Chris Rock's family. I mean, That's what I said. I just narrowly put it to Chris Rock's family. Uh-huh. I have no idea if the Robitussin thing is something for all.
Or like bricks of heroin in our family.
Yes, yes, yes.
Just wanted to address that. Pete and Lonnie, after the last podcast, shared something on Facebook about how feminine hygiene products are mandatory to be offered for free to all female prisoners.
Yep.
And in school institutions as well, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was an interesting kind of a plot hole, I guess.
Yeah, I saw that posted to Reddit, and there were admittedly some heavily downvoted comments, but there was a surprise amount of people bitching about it. I'm like, you know that if there was something with dudes where we shit our pants uncontrollably for like 3 days out of the month, we would have...
Free diapers.
Day, yep, that would be something that you could go.
It'd be mandatory that you not work on those days.
There'd be dispensers on every corner just in case you're caught outside with them.
Yeah, there'd be special retreats for you to go to.
And you know what? I bet a lot of people, I would be happy for those people. Because I'm like, yes, you should not have to shit your pants in shame and have to deal with that mess. I wouldn't complain about them getting free fucking handouts.
Yeah.
Jesus, people.
Seriously. Okay. First one is from Nathan P. Who says, Caputo was tipped off about the heroin. Oh, this is a correction from before. Caputo was tipped off about the heroin by Angie and Leanne, the other meth head's name, and found a bag of it in Loose Check's desk. Loose Check had set this aside for himself, but blames it on Nikki rather than own up to it, which is why Nikki sent to Max. It wasn't Nikki's fault. She wasn't keeping it for herself.
But wait a second. I thought she also... Didn't she have a small personal quantity that was kind of like an ironic thing?
My memory... I didn't rewatch it or read about it or anything like that. My memory tells me that they both agreed to set that aside, or he told her not to.
Hmm. Okay.
I swear that's how it went down. But
okay.
Again. Decide for yourself. Yeah. Don't rewatch it. Just figure it out.
Yeah.
Just use your best judgment.
We report, you decide.
Jennifer S. says, I'm not... there's a little feedback about our format here. She says, I'm not sure what happened in the episodes that you were talking about with this new format, so I'm just getting bits and pieces of plot lines. For binge watchers, it's confusing. We're not hearing anything about the production credits that I've grown to love. It feels choppy. I was wondering if you were planning on doing the more traditional recaps during the summer versus the mass recap cast.
Well, I feel you. The problem is, it's just like, I mean, I'm not going to defend it. It's definitely... This format is not as great for grounding you in the events of individual episodes. It's more for general discussion. Mm-hmm. And it's something that Jim and I kind of pioneered with our coverage of House of Cards this season. And then we extended it to the Daredevil, our Daredevil coverage. And people seem to like it. Because the thing is, I can conclusively say that after 3 weeks, after something is released on Netflix, our interest in our coverage plummets.
Yeah.
So then that's the reason we
went 3 weeks later, and you're going to wait 3 episodes in.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, a person that is saying that they miss that type of coverage probably would, mm-hmm. but they're very much in the minority. So we're trying to do this thing where we're balancing people's need to binge and fostering interesting discussion. But the weaknesses is it doesn't do it very, like, if you're coming, like, I feel like the scene-by-scene recaps are great when people are coming back and they're like, oh, I like what Bald Move is doing in this show. Now I want to go back and listen to all of them. And I might not need to even watch the episode because, like, oh, yes, of course this is the episode because they're doing such a great job breaking it scene-by-scene.
Yeah.
It doesn't serve you for that shit. Because if you go back and this is not fresh in your mind, it's like it's almost useless. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I don't like about it is it's not nearly as funny because, like, there's a lot of specific things of humor that is, like, funny, but that you would comment on a scene by scene.
Yeah.
But when you're doing this thematic stuff, it gets lost.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it allows us to cover the stuff quickly at the speed of binging. And, you know, if Netflix had a different model, we'd probably do it differently. But this is kind of like the end result after a lot of trial and error. And honestly, for this year, I don't even know that I could have done a, you know, full scene by scene recap 2 or 3 a week. Because that's what he did last year. I was doing 3 a week, I think.
Yes, you were.
So that definitely wouldn't have happened.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
The next year, I don't know. Like, I might revisit it because unfortunately we won't have Banshee or Penny Dreadful that compete for my time and attention.
Too soon.
And supposedly it's going to be a mini season of Game of Thrones next year too. So yeah. Also, if Netflix would see fit to launch this in July, that would help out a lot too. We will see. And I'm sorry that you're feeling pinched by this.
You heard it here first, Jennifer. You're the minority and your opinion doesn't matter. The next feedback is from Mimi H. This is in reference to the song Tomorrow Belongs to Me. Long time. So happy you're once more covering the show. I just wanted to comment on the cabaret song Tomorrow Belongs to Me. It fits really well with the Orange is the New Black scene. The song is so creepy and effective in the film. It starts with an innocent-looking boy singing in a beer garden and his homeland, only for the camera to shift and reveal his Nazi uniform.
Beer garden is fascist as fuck, and everyone knows it.
It becomes an imperious and sinister recruiting song as the music crowd and other Nazis join in. The main holdouts are the bemused main characters and an old veteran who looks disgusted.
Mm-hmm.
The bit in the show with Gina and Morello looking around like these ladies are crazy was a cool parallel. Also, a German aristocrat scoffs at the scene and asserts the Nazis are merely radicals given some leeway because they're taking out the communists. Gave me vibes of Piscatella turning a blind eye to the rise of the white supremacists.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of, like, allegory here.
Yeah. I guess the biggest divergence is the cabaret character is being interesting and sympathetic instead of being Piper.
You will always get a Piper dig red. That's the secret. Mm-hmm. Up, up, down, down, left, right, BA Select started this podcast. Just talk shit about Piper.
Yeah. Nathan says, I guess Piper's attempt to rebrand herself didn't go too well. Wah, wah.
Again, you just got 30 lives and yeah. Infinity cheats. You cracked the code.
On a more serious note, the scene made me feel physically sick. Piper may have done a lot of things wrong. Maybe a shitty person, but she didn't deserve that.
Go ahead.
Fuck Caputo. He doesn't care. An innocent woman could have been shot, but he only cares about getting rocks off with his crazy girlfriend.
I know. Emotional whiplash. And the thing about the Piper scene is I was prepared for her to get, like, her hand on the hot stove burnt.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, ooh, this is already pretty fucking brutal.
Oh, God. How's she going to use her hand?
But then when they do this swastika, it's like, oh, God. Because that's a whole other level of emotional trauma, too. Especially for, imagine Piper going into life with a swastika branded on her forearm.
You know, it was very nice of them to put it in a place where she could hide it at a professional job, though.
I remember us, after the episode, we were talking like, man, like, what if they put that on her forehead?
Right, or her cheek, or even the top of her hand, something like that, where you just can't cover that all the time.
And I guess, like, they didn't do that because they didn't want the COs to know.
Right.
But on the other hand, I think Piper would be so intimidated that she'd just be like, yeah, this is what I do now because I'm with the white power group.
Also, I feel like it's really improbable that it would bleed that much. I mean, it's a burn.
It's a burn. Sure.
I mean, unless she's picking at the scabs, but probably. If Piper seems like
she'd be a picker.
She's got gauze on top of her sleeve, on top of another sleeve. That's my nitpick. Nikki P says,
maybe it should have, instead of bleeding, it should have burnt through like the Ark of the Covenant in Indiana Jones.
Exactly. So now it's on all of your clothes.
It just starts through this throbbing bass and just burns right through. Yeah.
Nikki P says, I wanted Piper to get her comeuppance, but that degree.
Did you say she got a into retribution third
challenged my feelings, which is especially effective since I've never liked Piper. On the other hand,
I know. It makes you feel like a real shitty human, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Nikki should feel like a real shitty human. That's what Aaron says.
Would you stop?
On the one hand, she's very much responsible for fanning the flames. There she goes again. I don't know if I can finish
too soon.
This email.
Too soon, people.
Of Aryan hatred and gelling that hate group together. On the other hand, cruel and unusual punishment. The show did a good job with making me feel conflict in my thoughts about that punishment. I think it played into a strong theme this season of what is the purpose of prison in America.
Yes.
Is it rehabilitation or just punishment, and why do we feel the way we do about what is acceptable for prisoners to experience just because they have broken a law?
Sure. Like, for example, the widely held belief that male prisoners should get pounded in the ass because fuck them, they're prisoners.
Right. D says, the show just messes so much with my emotions. you feel like nothing much is happening and you're just happily watching these wacky antics and it's drama central and tears all over the place. I feel like this would be better if I could do an Australian accent.
Nothing could go.
No.
You want to start war with America and Australia? No. I mean, it's going to happen in 2018 when Emperor Trump declares a war against all of the old Britannia, but
not fighting spiders and drop bears. The guard who didn't even realize he had raped Pennsylvania was such a good comment on what's going on these days, and the fact that she really thinks it's okay now is heartbreaking. Is her need for companionship so great? I get why Boo was angry, but she's taking it out on the wrong person. Yes.
And that's the poor thing, Boo. Like, is that... I mean, oh God, I'm of six minds about all this shit.
It's very hard. It's also, it's a reflection of Boo's character because,
right?
I mean, well, Boo's so hard. She's so steadfast in her beliefs and she's so hard to get to know on a personal level.
And when she said swear to God, emphasizing God, like that's because, you know, her
Pennsylvania's history with God.
Well, no, but also Boo's, like, remember her mom was a big holy roller, couldn't accept the fact that she was a lesbian and that she's, you know, angry at God. So that was like really emphatic coming from her character.
Yeah. Dee continues, I have zero sympathy for Piper getting branded. You lay with dogs, you get up with fleas. She started a bloody white power movement. Okay, she didn't mean it, but that's the lesson. Healy continues to fascinate me. I could just watch a whole series about him and his backstory. I love his rapport with Lolly, and now he seems to be trying to help her in lieu of being able to help his mum.
What's also therapy for him. So Healy is especially taking interest to her because if he can save Lolly, it's almost as good as saving his mom.
Is that the same rationale he had when he took one of his patients to the movies?
That's what I'm saying. Like, Dee's got me feeling complicated feelings because her strong fuck Piper position, I'm sympathetic to. But her, like, Healy as a fascinating, interesting character, I'm like, boo hiss. So even in the feedback, I can't get away from this glass case of emotion.
Aaron taking on all feedbackers this week. One thing that's kind of annoying me is why so many of the guards have to be so awful in this season. I feel like other than Pornstache, they were much more like regular people than cartoon villains in earlier seasons.
Isn't that part of the...
I feel like they're much more realistically scary this season than they were before.
But also, isn't that part of the statement of you try to cut corners and hire the lowest common denominator and get these people that might need therapy themselves in there because you get kickbacks and stuff and you
these
get
are
really
veterans that
guards.
No one else will hire.
Right. And
they've seen some
if anything,
shit.
I'm surprised we haven't got any feedback from like people in the armed forces like, what the fuck? Like, really? Really? This is what we think of our fighting men and women?
No, I think it shows what America does to their fighting men and women once the war is over.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's just not a couple of them that are... I mean, I guess the woman is not... And we talked about how that's interesting that she doesn't approve of, like, the old boys club, but she's clearly accepting it. My thought on that is, like, well, you know, like, the sexual harassment that goes on in the armed forces is kind of off the charts, so maybe... She just sees this as normal and like this is how you get along to get along, go along to get along.
Right. You and I just had this conversation
the
other week or day.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Like, you are a woman that's uncomfortable in your circumstances. Do you blow the whistle to make yourself feel more comfortable? But it brings on a new onslaught of repercussions.
Right.
Like, sure, retaliation's illegal. Okay, yeah. Great. But now... You're no fun to hang out with anymore.
Yeah,
now
so
you're not
going to froze out.
Yeah,
and pass over for promotion. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's the kind of conversation I had with Kelly last year about what is a woman's duty to report a rape. You know, like that's it is heroic that women do stand up to this bullshit in the workplace, but it takes a pretty strong person with willpower and preferably a support network to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because you really are going against a system that's stacked against you for uncertain rewards and near certain drawbacks and punishments.
Especially, this is a very extreme example where they are actively oppressing these criminal prisoner women. But I just feel like, yeah, even more so, she's got to be tougher than the rest. That's a weird position to be in. I'm surprised she hasn't vocalized her feelings more.
I wonder whether if she's they're cool building up to it. Because, like, they had that plot with Maria or Maritza doing her eyes, and I feel like then there might be building up with something with her.
Exactly. Like, she...
Maybe she'll be the one that puts a stop to this gun to the head bullshit.
Hope so. That'd be badass. Like, nope. You know who she reminds me of? What's her name? Xena's sidekick?
Oh, shit, yeah. What was her name? Callista? I don't know. I wasn't a Xena fan.
I was. But I was just
Xena. I was equal opportunity to hate her. I didn't like Hercules either.
Oh, and they did a crossover.
Guess
got,
who?
Got my whispers just, all wet.
Just found the Xena geek.
Okay. Michael McBee, that's what you call him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Writes in and says, gotta say this stretch of episodes has made me care about Piper for the first time in about two seasons.
Don't let that love into your heart.
It was funny to see how obviously Piper's fight with Maria was going to blow up in her face, but not to the point where she would accidentally start a white power group and get Maria more time. You could already see that she was starting to finally become slightly self-aware, slightly. But it wasn't until the swastika was branded on her that she really understood what she was doing and how shitty of a person she had become. I felt sick about her getting branded, but at the same moment said she completely did this to herself. On the same note, I don't think that anyone should be treated that way, so fuck Maria. You have the right to be mad at Piper more than most people, but fucking branding someone is ridiculous and way too cruel. So was taking away five more years of a person's life for doing the same shit you were doing.
I know. I'm of six minds on this situation, too.
She wasn't even serious competition, I don't think. Girl was stealing panties, was aping exactly what Piper was doing, but they didn't have any of the resources set up until Piper gave it to them.
It's all about escalation and what is it worth, and, you know. But, I mean, there's also, you could say, like, the Piper, there was no precedent for people getting extra time for these kind of minor infractions. And Piscatella's kind of iron fist. There's, you know, it's escalation.
He did say that he was making an example of her.
You know, he brought up, if it wasn't for the Batman, we wouldn't have the Joker.
Yeah. And P.S. Fuck Hapakaka. Fucking shit. Hapakuka. You don't get to be the cause of that type of shit and then ask, are you okay? If I was Piper, I would tell her to go fuck herself if she asked me that.
But wasn't that just a mirror of Piper's kind of like, you know what? I need to apologize because I did, you know.
I didn't think so, because as soon as she came out, as soon as she set her up in the trap and she walked out, she sat down, you could tell she felt guilty. Like, not enough to say something or stop it guilty.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, I don't know. Again, I've
but
got...
I don't think she's a bad person.
You're right.
But I think she's just getting her own, and sometimes that sucks.
Well, and also, Piper keeps fucking switching between Heisenberg and Walter White. Like, which person did you send up the river? Did you send up Heisenberg, or did you send up Walter White? Like, Piper keeps on switching lanes.
I mean, sometimes... Yeah, sometimes being the person that stands up for yourself is a really hard thing to do.
And she's the, like, you know...
she doesn't even know if she's making the right decision.
And she's got no gang to fit in. And Latina girls come in there and say, you got to do this with this Piper, and she's his white power, and she hasn't done shit to you. And also, by the way, we're going to fuck you up if you don't. Like, I have a hard time judging her.
I mean, does she...
I mean, it's easy to say, like, well, yeah, you shouldn't give up a person to have themselves branded with a swastika, but I don't know. It's prison. You gotta be a prisoner. Prison go to prison. Yep.
That's all I've got.
Whew. What a emotional roller coaster this episode has been. This podcast.
Yeah, you came hard at every single one of the feedbackers.
The feedbackers came hard at me, you know. You come at the king, you best not miss, you know, talking shit about my new format and how much I hate Piper, and, you know, sometimes you're going to get cut.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to get a Bald Move logo branded on you. What are you going to do?
I didn't come
hard at anybody. You're just starting to start shit. Piper.
I was hopakukaing you and the feedbackers.
No, you're blonde white girling.
If I were really good at photoshopping, I would do that. I would get a shot of her having her arm branded and just do Bald Move instead. And that would be our new cover image.
Well, I don't know. It seems like more and more when we say things like that, people make it happen and post it to Facebook and the forums. So maybe we will get a poorly or welly. Welly.
Welly.
A welly done. Welly a tastefully done. Executed bald move logo branded on Piper.
If you're interested, so am I.
You can send it to orange@baldmove.com or post it on forums.facebook.com. Wait, forums.baldmove.com.
Just put it on the internet. We'll find it.
Sure. Post it to brandedpiperarm@baldmove.forums. HTTPS. Make sure it's secure.
Twitter. Hashtag Facebook. Slack.
There you go. All the channels of communication covered. I'll be back at Pilani for episodes 10, 11, and 12. And then next week we'll have the finale recap episode. Hope you guys stick with
us. Bum, bum. It's going to be... Jesus, I was going to say gangbang, but that's not what I mean to say.
No,
but kind of in the prison kind of way. The girls against the Aaron.
The girls against what are you talking about?
The finale episode. All three of us are going to be on the finale episode.
Oh,
together.
Right. Yes.
Jesus.
The menage a pod.
There you go. You did it better.
The pot a trois.
It's creepy, however you put it.
Yep.
Sorry, P. Ilani, if you're listening.
Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed, and we'll be back in a couple days. See you then.